Hello, friends. Welcome to episode 29 of A Year-Long Conversation. Today we're going to be talking about, are the outsiders really elites? Joining me, as always, is Blue in Alabama's Michael. This has been the most eventful week. Between 28 and 29, there's really only been a week and a half gap, but I feel like everything's, I mean, this has probably been the most eventful week of the whole campaign.
Yeah, it really has. I mean, there's been so much happen. I feel like there's no way we're going to get it all covered in one podcast.
I'm going to go ahead and give people a table of contents. We're going to talk about their running mates. Trump picked his running mate, and Hillary picked her running mate. We're going to talk about the Republican convention. We're going to talk about Bernie's endorsement, and we're even going to find, time to basically put in a theme, really, about the, we hear a lot about outsiders. This has been the year of the outsiders, but is that misleading, and are they really just as elite as anybody? The first story that happened between the break is that Trump chose Mike Pence.
Yeah.
And, nobody's out there really saying that. And then Hillary chose Tim Kaine, which I have to give you credit for that when we were picking who the running mates you're going to pick. I was still foolishly on the Castro train because, I mean, I heard so much about this hot young Castro kid. I thought, Hillary's picking the sexy option. And it's like, nope, she's going to go with Tim Kaine. And I guess they crunched the numbers and they figured that, just like with Obama, he goes, I can't be the first black president and have a female running mate. I mean,
yeah.
We're no John, born old Joe Biden's out there making Joe Biden's like, I'll be making a ham sandwich, Obama. Okay, Joe, you go do your thing for 8 years. I feel like that's kind of the same with Hillary. She's like, I'll be the first female president. It's probably the smart pick. People keep calling it the safe pick. Well, it's the smart pick. I guess really though, like I was holding out hope for that Al Franken would some, like just surprise us and have Franken. But I mean, I kind of really didn't think she was going to do that, but I kind of wish that she would have done that. But let's kind of get into these running mate picks. I don't think Tim Kaine was as much a surprise as Mike Pence. When we were talking about running mates back in episode 25 and talking about who Trump might pick, I mean, we didn't even mention him. It really feels like something Trump came up with like 2 weeks before he announced it. He'd burned through so many. I mean, he'd been like,
yeah.
Rotating them out. I mean, at one point, everybody that we thought, Bob Corker, which would have been a really great pick, he's like, I decided to stay in the Senate, and he kind of bowed out, and Joni Ernst is like, no, I think Iowa needs me. I'm like, who the fuck would choose to stay in Iowa if they could go be the Vice President of the United States? I think there was all these people that dropped out. I mean, we were joking around off the podcast that Jeff Sessions will be the last man standing. I mean, if the race had gone on another month,
yeah.
If Trump had said one more dumb joke, Jeff Sessions would have been the only one willing to take that job who's currently in Congress or whatever, how hilarious would it have been if he picked Jeff Sessions as his running mate? Like, just how funny would that have been,
Probably not as funny as him probably going to put Jeff Sessions as, like, Secretary of State or something.
And, I mean, he might. Well, we'll never know because we're going to make it our mission.
Yeah.
That he's not elected president. So we'll never know, but I mean, the hypothetical Trump cabinet could easily include Jeff Sessions as Secretary of State. I could just see Jeff Sessions out in Saudi Arabia. Y'all sure got some funny dresses out here. I've never seen such a thing. I mean, imagine that big jug beard, dumbass, Gomer Pyle looking fucker out in like Iran or something, like talking to the Iranian, like, Ayatollah Co. What? Coca-Cola? I've never heard of such a thing. I mean, just imagine his ass up there, man. Oh, God.
He's like, I heard about some of you guys in a Latin movie.
He's like, we're going to blow up Iran as soon as I can find it. Let me get the map out. Let me see where it is. I mean, I just couldn't imagine. But, I mean, do you think, I mean, on a scale of 1 to 10, you think Mike Pence is a good running mate? Or, I mean, because me, I'd probably give him like a 5 or a 6. He's not bad. He's not good. I don't think he's going to get Trump a single vote that he wouldn't have already gotten. But, I mean, I'm kind of neutral about it.
I wrote a blog about it, and I think that picking Pence was really more catering to the Republican base. It gave them that conservative, like physical conservative, social conservative person on the ticket that a lot of Republicans were looking for, and they didn't get with Trump. And I think the pick was more about shoring up the Republican base than it was what he could actually bring to the ticket.
I mean,
as far as anything else.
Yeah. In a way, they both kind of went with safe picks, because in Trump's case, what he had to do was try to fix, like, his problems within his own. I feel like he comes from a place of weakness, where he's sitting there thinking, like, what if I'm not actually nominated, right? So, I mean, I think he picked Pence as a way to, like, make sure that when they go into the convention, the Never Trump movement shuts the fuck up, and he's actually formally nominated. So it felt like he was trying to like make sure that the base had something and that they would all get behind him. It also felt like he had a huge Midwestern problem. Midwestern people don't like him, and he's also banked his whole campaign strategy on trying to pick up those Rust Belt states of Ohio and Pennsylvania, and then to a lesser extent Michigan and Wisconsin. I mean, if he doesn't pick those up, he's dead. But I think that Pickens Pence is fundamentally ignorant about that area, because somebody from Indiana, that's not going to mean anything to people from Ohio and Pennsylvania and Michigan. The Midwest is extremely regional, and I don't think you can just pick somebody from Indiana and think that's going to translate to Ohio, but I can see where Trump's like, it's all the Central Time Zone. Who gives a fuck, you know? I doubt most people in Pennsylvania have even heard of Mike Pence, and same thing for Ohio.
Well, yeah, like, you know, Donald Trump Jr. reached out to John Kasich of Ohio, and was basically like, how would you like to be the most powerful vice president ever? And was saying that, you know, Donald was going to put him in charge of all the fiscal and domestic policy. But basically, he wanted him to run the country. And Kasich was like, well, what's Donald going to do? And Donald Jr. was like, make America great again.
Yeah, I mean, I can remember seeing Trump and Pence on 60 Minutes, and Leslie Stahl kept saying, what are you going to do? Make America great again. Well, how are you going to do it? We're going to make America great again. It really feels like one of those medals that they give the kids at the Special Olympics or whatever.
Yeah,
like, it just feels like one of those token gestures that they throw out to people, because if that story is true, I'm surprised Kasich didn't take that. Either way, it looks like we are dealing with the shadow presidency, because either Kasich's going to be pulling the strings if he'd have been the running mate, but a lot of people are now saying, well, Trump's kids are pulling the strings. And that's why, talking about the Republican convention, I was just shocked at how big a deal they put on his kids. Like, I mean, there was one holdout of the convention that were, his sons are going to speak. And then the night before that, Melania is going to speak. And then the night after that, his daughter is going to introduce him. We're going to have, who gives a fuck? And he's got his kids vote. The Bushes protested the convention. Jeb Bush and George W. Bush don't want Trump to be president. I mean, Jeb and George are going to vote for Hillary, you know. They haven't come out and said that, but I know W is pretty close with the Clintons, and the Bush family's become kind of friends with them or whatever. They're probably going to vote for Hillary, and they may even shovel some money her way, like off the books or whatever, super PAC.
You know, Barbara Bush come out in support of Hillary.
Yeah, with the Republican Party. The Bushes are for Hillary. John Kasich did not go to the convention, which I thought was very... I mean, the convention is in Cleveland. It's in his state. He is the Republican governor of the place the Republican convention is held. And he's like, nah, I'll take a pass. What the fuck is that about, that? Like, not going. I'll take a pass. That would be like them having it in Birmingham for some reason. And then Robert Bentley, nah, I don't think I can make it. I don't want to go. It's got to be a huge honor for the governor of that state to have, like, most people kill to have that. That's like hosting the Olympics.
Yeah.
And so for Kasich to say, I'm not going. And then, even worse, Ted Cruz did go, basically said he's not going to support Trump, he's not going to vote for him.
Yeah.
I mean, like, at the convention, to loud boos. I want to talk about this for just a second. Let me get one last shot in at that old bastard, Ted Cruz, our number one nemesis. A lot of people are saying, that's good. That's a profile in courage, and that's Ted Cruz. No. You had to pay attention to what he was saying.
Yeah.
Because what he was saying, he coded it in. Like, he just said, you got to vote your conscience, and you got to think about your values. The liberals might hear that, and they might hear, like, oh, he's with us about, no, he's not with you at all. What he was talking about was Trump is not conservative enough. And that's what he was talking about. And then on the other hand, when he was talking about Trump's ways, he meant about his wife and his father specifically. Like, he goes, I'm not going to support a guy who attacked my wife and my father. Ted Cruz doesn't give a shit about Trump's attacks, because people heard attacks and they thought, oh, he's defending. Ted Cruz agrees with Trump about Mexico.
Yeah.
And Ted Cruz is even worse, because he also goes after gay people and transgender people, which Trump leaves alone for the most part. So he's even worse. He doesn't just go after Trump's groups. He adds groups to the mix that he hates and everything. Ted Cruz is worse than Trump in every category, but people are saying, oh, this is courageous. And I'm like, no, he's talking about, he doesn't like Trump because he talked about his wife. Like, it's not, it's not about Trump's general offensiveness. It's about he was offensive to his wife personally. It's not about him being a hero and hidden message of that. Really, the reason Ted Cruz hopes Trump loses is because he'd like to run against Hillary in 2020.
Yeah, and that's what I was going to say. Like, well, just call it what it is. Ted Cruz was laying out his platform for 2020. I mean, that's exactly what he was doing. He knows Trump isn't going to win, so he's not going to back him because he wants to be able to say, I stood up to Donald Trump when nobody else would, when the party was falling in line behind Trump, and he failed. Like, I didn't fall in line. I stuck to Browns. I stuck to my morals. He was laying out his platform.
Well, it's a tactic. It's one that he's actually borrowed from Trump, because when Trump was in the primary, he kept saying Mitt Romney's a loser. He couldn't close the deal against Obama. I feel like Ted Cruz is the most disgusting person in American politics because he's like this amorphous blob. He's probably an alien. If we get under his skin, he'd be an alien. He's just absorbing shit from everybody else. Like, I thought he just goes home and he watches CNN and all these different networks, and he's just, I like what they did. And he just borrows it. Like, he's got his accent from the Bushes. He's got Trump's strategies and everything. He's got Rubio's, I speak Spanish and all this shit. I mean, like, he's pulling all these amorphous things from everybody else, and it's all just totally fake. I mean, like, he's got that strategy from Trump, who was shitting on Romney for losing to Obama, and you're exactly right. In 2020, he'll be like, I was the one who knew Trump wasn't the one to beat Hillary, and he lost, and that's why I'm the one to run now. Kasich probably didn't want to be associated with Trump because he wants to run in 2020. So, I mean, really, Ted Cruz and Kasich and all these guys, they're not able to endorse Trump at the convention because they're hosting their own loser's ball over there. Like, I'm sure they go down to the loser's ball and scheme of how to get back in there in 2020. And really, you think about it, all of Trump's main primary opponents, I know Christie's endorsed him, and Ben Carson has endorsed him in a way that you don't want to be endorsed. I mean, Ben Carson's the worst campaign spokesman I've ever seen in my life. I've never seen somebody this horrible. Ben Carson comes out there, well, we all know Trump will be a disaster, but you should vote for him anyway. Oops, did I say that out loud? I didn't mean to say that out loud. I mean, he's terrible. He goes up there and is like, well, it's only 4 years. We can afford to throw away 4 years of the country. You know, I'm just like, he said, we've probably had worse presidents than Trump. I don't know. I'd have to look it up. I mean, yeah. I don't know why they're still using this idiot.
Yeah, he was on The View, and Wolfie was like, why are you endorsing this man? This man is an openly racist, he's a bigot, he's this, he's that. And Ben Carson literally goes, well, what's the alternative?
If I were Trump's campaign manager, I'd be like, Ben, we got the most important speech of your life, and then go put him in a Hardee's bathroom and lock the door or something, not let him out. He'd be like, wait, let me out of here, you know. I would have him giving speeches at, like, truck stop bathrooms. I wouldn't let him on national TV to talk about anything. He's terrible.
Yeah. You know, if you lock him in a bathroom, he's not going to be able to scream loud enough for anybody to hear him to let him out.
Quietly dying there, like, help, help. So you got Carson and Christie. But, I mean, out of a field of 15 candidates, almost nobody else is.
Yeah.
Jeb took a pass. Rubio was MIA. If he went to the convention, I didn't see it, if he was there. I didn't see it.
No, I don't think he was.
He must have been in the cheap seats if he was there. Kasich was not there. Ted Cruz, unfortunately, was there. Carly Fiorina's not really endorsed Trump. I mean, there's a lot of people that have not, that he ran against, that have not come. It's people saying he'll unite the party. No, he hasn't. And on the flip side of the spectrum, Hillary's the only Democrat in the known universe that had not already endorsed Hillary. Bernie Sanders finally did the right thing and finally came around. I mean, it's about a month too late, but whatever. You know, he finally came around. 6 months too late, probably, but he did come around, and he, it's a full-throated endorsement. And, of course, Bernie's fans on Twitter were like, I bet she's got his kids hostage or something. You know, like, speculate, know why. Like, the evil Clinton machine or whatever would be like, I bet he's got some kind of blackmail file on Bernie or something. And then, of course, I had to say, well, that would mean Bernie did something to be blackmailed for. Are you saying he's not perfect? No, we're not saying that. He's Jesus. Anyway, so you literally have the entire Democratic Party totally behind Hillary. Everybody, now that Bernie's finally gotten in line. And on the Republican side, neither of the former Republican presidents are endorsing Trump. All five ex-presidents, include Obama into that, are behind Hillary. But because, I mean, it's not just her husband and her former boss when she was Secretary of State when Obama was president. It's not just them. You got Jimmy Carter and both of the Bushes, the Republicans. I mean, all five that are behind. I mean, this is unprecedented. I've never seen this before.
Yeah, it really is.
Which only makes it more painful that when I was watching the Republican convention and I saw Trump give that speech, I have to come out of stand, I'm on the Trump train. Trump won me over. I saw that speech. I said, beat that, Hillary.
The only way that Trump would have won anybody over is if he was like, I'm going to speak until you come to my side. And so, you know, probably like, fine, I'm on your side. Just shut up now.
Michael, give up. You're on a losing side. You're backing a loser candidate. We all know it. How can you beat Trump? I'm on the right side now because we've got Tiffany Trump. We've got Ivanka Trump. We've got Eric Trump. We've got Don Jr. How can you beat anybody with that much support behind them?
You know, I don't know. You have Ivanka Trump. For one, I think that she's being held against her will and Donald secretly raping her.
Whoa, Lord. Before they came out for Mike Pence, they said something about, you know, maybe Ivanka would be his running mate. And then, like, Eric Trump went, well, she's got the good looks or whatever like that. And I was like, God, what is with Trump men talking about Ivanka? I mean, I don't have a sister. You have a sister. You tell me if this is normal for somebody to be like, my sister sure is vulnerable enough to be the vice president of the United States. Like, I don't think that's normal at all, you know?
No, not at all.
He may not even have Melania Trump, because if Melania Trump reads a Michelle Obama speech that's for Hillary, she might just give that speech instead and be like, well, I'm pretty sure she's just going to start copying Michelle's moves from now on. So I had that joke on Twitter. I said, but Melania thanks for speechwriters, copy and paste, because it's just, I mean, it was really, really obvious that people put their speeches, and then even when I was listening to it, I didn't put it together that she was ripping off Michelle Obama, but when I was listening to that speech, and she's like, Donald's going to be good for the Mexicans and the minorities and the gay people and the Muslims. That sounded like Obama. Like, when she was saying that, I thought, is that Obama or Donald Trump, the guy who says that he was born in Kenya and doesn't believe he's American? When she was saying that, I thought, that doesn't sound right. But, and the crowd was going crazy and they were clapping. I think that's where the Republican Party's at, to where you don't have to really be for any of these things. You just have to say you are. Rubio and Cruz can come out and say, I'm for Mexicans more than anybody, which is why we need to get rid of them. Gritty, you're so good for Mexicans.
Uh-huh.
It's all fake. It's total word nonsense. And you listen to Trump's speech, and really, I think people always put it on Trump. When you watch that crowd and you watch what they respond to and what they don't respond to, you understand why the Republicans are not going to have a good nominee, not in the foreseeable future, because of what they believe. For example, when Trump said, we need to do something about student loan debt. Well, I like that, right? Like, most people would agree with that, but they cut out to the crowd and it was like, whatever. You know, people were falling asleep and like one or two people clapped. And right after that, he said, we need to beef up our military and make them big again. And they all went fucking nuts. It was like, take shit out there. You see that the priorities are wrong. So how can they ever have a good nominee if relieving student loan debt gets like wimpy applause, no applause practically. People were yawning. And then you talk about beefing up the military spending, which is the last thing in the world we need to do. I mean, it's like, it's the only thing in America that has enough money that it needs. The military has enough money. Almost nothing else in the public sector has enough money. And it's the one thing that does. And then he talks about how our military is depleted and it's the smallest it's been and we don't have enough weapons. And all stuff is just, it's just flat wrong. Like, it's just wrong. And people are going nuts out there. When you're hearing that, I mean, the priorities are bad. So how do you change the priorities of the Republican Party so that you got to do that before you're ever going to have a truly good nominee?
But, I mean, that's not our problem. That's their problem. I think our problem, our problem is kind of what you're just talking about. Donald Trump, he does. He just makes things up as he goes along. Really, here's the question. How is Hillary going to debate a man like that? Nothing he says is true, but if he says it, people believe it. And like, it doesn't matter what the facts say, people are going to believe him.
During the debates, probably what's going to happen is that he's going to set a new record for like the most number of lies. Like, they'll have a fact checker who has to go to the hospital for exhaustion. I can't take this anymore. Like, they just pass out during one of the debates. When Mitt Romney did this, because he lied a lot during the debates with Obama, when the moderator would step in and say, you just said something that's wrong, like you just lied about it, immediately Fox News and the right-wing media, they start squealing that it's liberal bias. You're in a place where Trump is definitely going to lie during the debates against Hillary, but when the moderator steps in and just says, that's wrong, you're lying, like that's not true, it'll just set them off in a panic circle. They said that moderator's not partisan enough, it's a liberal bias. That's the game the Republicans have gotten away with for a long time, is that, you know, to be fair, I mean, to anybody who's on the fence or anybody who's a conservative, it looks like liberal bias, because it's not, because it's just trying to keep like things straight or whatever. Like, if Hillary goes out there and she has to know her numbers and she has to know all of her facts just to say everything, and then Trump comes out there, a Mexican just raped Ivanka. Oh my God, I just got a text, guys. Like that, he just comes out there with this crazy shit. Like, right now, there's 10,000 ISIS agents in America. Where'd you get that number from? I read it on the internet. Something's going on. Something is going on. And if he comes out there with this shit, if Hillary says you're wrong and the moderator steps in and says, well, you don't say that, and then they start screaming liberal bias, there's really no way that you, I hear a lot of people say things like, well, Trump's only the nominee because the media didn't hit him hard enough. Wrong.
No.
Dead wrong.
Yeah.
That's absolutely wrong. And that's taking a very dangerous idea away from this, that Republican voters care what the media thinks. They don't. When the media coverage in the primaries against him was so negative, it made him look like an underdog. And so when people started like thinking he's being picked on, they kind of did this with Bush a little bit. When Bush was running against Gore, the media, they did take Gore's side. I took Gore's side. Anybody with half a brain knew he'd be a better president than George W. Bush. When it was like so lopsided, I think a lot of people felt like, oh, poor George, and he felt like the underdog, and it was all bullshit. I mean, George W. Bush has had breaks that anybody else would kill to have. I mean, he's the poster child for failing upwards. Bush would be like, well, I had a savings and loan scandal that almost wrecked the economy. Oh, it's okay, George. You want an oil company? Okay, I went down to Texas. I couldn't find oil. How about a baseball team? Sure, I have a baseball team. Texas Rangers suck. Well, I'm baseball. Hey, how about being governor of Texas? Okay, I ran Texas on the ground, run for president. He failed at everything he ever did. And he became president anyway, and people felt sorry for him. And when he was running against Kerry, people thought Bush was the underdog, the son of a president and the incumbent president. They thought, oh, they're all picking on him. And I'm afraid that that's going to happen with Trump. And this kind of ties into our theme. What I mean when I say are the outsiders really elites, like people talk about Trump, he's the outsider, the first president we would have ever had that has no government experience. And so people look at that as kind of an underdog figure. Media narrative is basically Hillary's the ultimate insider. She's the former first lady. She's a secretary of state. She was a senator. Obama's endorsed her. As I said, all five ex-presidents have endorsed her. The entire political establishment of the Democratic Party is behind her. Some of the Republican establishment is behind her. And a lot of the people in the Republican Party do not want Trump to win. They would rather Hillary win and run somebody that they liked in 2020.
Yeah.
So a lot of people, it looks like, well, she's got this machine and she's going to dominate and Trump's the underdog. I think that's a dangerous narrative because Trump is not an outsider in the way that we think about it. Like, he is a billionaire. You know, like, he has resources at his disposal that most of us could not conceive of. I mean, he could literally probably have a floating harem in the Caspian Sea right now. We don't even know about it. I mean, he's got, I've said before that whenever I listen to billionaires and millionaires whining about taxes and all the taxes they pay, I wish they'd shut the fuck up because I would rather be a millionaire today than the emperor of Rome. Because a millionaire today, you have no polio, you have none of these diseases that are knocking people out. You can actually have medical treatment to where you might live past the age of 35 so you can actually enjoy your wealth. And you have jet travel. Like, even if you were rich in the 1830s, you had to take a damn train everywhere. You're like, oh, I'll get there next week. I'll get there next 1 minute. You can do anything. Basically, like, if you're rich today, you just have amazing abilities. And so I think when people think about Trump as an outsider or he's the scrappy underdog, I think that's dangerous to think of him that way. Cause I mean, he is a billionaire. And I mean, he does have like thousands of employees at his disposal. He does have private planes. He's lived an amazing life. I mean, his Melania, the first lady, will be basically somebody he picked out of a catalog. I mean, he was looking through his catalog. He's like, who's this model? Let's get her a green card. Gets her here from wherever in Eastern Europe. And I mean, it's not what we think of as an outsider, I don't think.
Yeah. And not only that, you talk about his political connections that he's had. But, I mean, he openly admits he knows how the system works, and he's worked the system.
When he sits down for those interviews, it makes it sound like an open bribery, basically. He's like, I know what I have to do and who I have to call. He's kind of like the Ray Liotta character in Goodfellas, listing all these connections. And a lot of times when I'm watching him talk, I mean, it sounds like some character in a modern-day mob movie or something, the way that he talks about the politicians, how he can get them to do what he wants. I know when the election was getting started, everybody was like, oh, it's the year of the outsider. Carly Fiorina. Carly Fiorina is another one that has had an unbelievably privileged background. When you looked at what, she's from Texas, but she went to school in like Europe and different places like this. I mean, private schools, her parents bought her anything she wanted. I mean, she's another one, just like George W. Bush, failing upwards. I mean, we saw her go from running H.P. Packard into the ground. I run for Senate. I did such a terrible job with H.P. Packard. I think I got what it takes to run for Senate. She fails at Senate. I'll run for president. She runs for president and fails. Ted Cruz picks his running mate. She's the only person I've ever seen to lose twice in the same primary season. Because, I mean, she failed at both the presidential election and then running mate of a guy who didn't win.
Yeah.
He picked her as running mate from start to finish. It was like 5 days later, oh, he drops out of the race. Because it was like his campaign was over. His campaign
yeah.
was, I mean, he picked her as running mate, and the very next state was Indiana, which killed it for him, and he was out. Coincidentally enough, Mike Pence supported Ted Cruz during the Indiana primaries. It's kind of weird that Trump picked him because of the way he likes his ass kissed. I'm laughing, too, because that story of midnight before the announcement, Trump's calling his advisors, can I get out of this? Can
yeah,
I pick
yeah.
somebody else? And he really wanted Chris Christie's, where everybody says that he really wanted Christie
yeah.
or Gingrich, but his kids were kind of like, no, you need Pence. You need to win, like, the Midwest, but you need Pence. He'll help you with the base and all this stuff. And, I mean, Christie probably wouldn't have helped him any more than Pence would have. I mean, it probably was a smarter pick in that sense. I'm just laughing at this image of, like, midnight before the day of the announcement, he's calling people being like, can I get out of this? Like Trump being forced to do a shotgun
yeah.
marriage with like some bride that he didn't want and all this. Like, I got cold feet. When you see them in interviews, like on the 60 Minutes interview, they don't seem like people who enjoy being around each other. Like, they don't really have good chemistry.
They're polar opposites, so why would they have good
yeah.
chemistry?
Yeah, it just, I bet the second that interview was done, Trump's like, get me out of here. I want to be on that private plane the second I get out of here. Harry Trump was like, oh, well, you spend a lot of time with the VP, so Trump's going to pick somebody he likes to be around. Which, Wall Street, they have what's called the airport test, where they pick a guy
yeah.
like to work for them that they want to be stuck at the airport with. And I was like,
yeah.
Trump's using the airport test to pick his VP. So, like, who can I stand being stuck on
yeah.
Air Force One with?
Well, it's funny because, like, if you watched on the third night of the convention when Mike Pence gave his speech, like, the first thing he says was talking about how Trump is allowed and just very in your face. He's like, apparently he wanted somebody to balance the ticket out. So he's basically saying, I'm the complete opposite of everything that Trump is. So he even acknowledges that they're nothing alike.
To me, the ways that they're different, they're really more negative for Pence than for Trump in the ways that they're different. Because, like, for example, they keep saying, well, Trump and Pence, they don't agree a lot politically. And I was like, all right, so maybe. But, it, but
yeah.
what they're talking about is Pence wanted to go to the Iraq War. Pence supported the Iraq War. He, not for, like, LGBT rights. He got, I mean, you know, Indiana, like, almost bankrupted the state with
yeah.
that anti-gay bill until he had to, you know, go back and do it again. The transgender thing, he cares about it. Trump doesn't. In most of the ways where they differ, I think less of Pence than Trump.
Yeah.
In the areas where they do differ, to me, he's worse than Trump. And so
oh, yeah.
I think that that's probably why Trump really kind of didn't want him, because, I mean, he's looking at it like, I need to try to snake Bernie Sanders' base away from Hillary and try to get those Bernie Sanders folks. And Pence is not, he doesn't appeal to them at all. I mean, at
no.
all, you know, like everything that they believe in, he's complete polar opposite. And
yeah.
the few things that they like about Trump, like not for, you know, going into the Iraq War, he's wanting a more protectionist environment for the economy. He's wanting to be more isolationist in military policy. Pence is none of those things. And their
yeah.
social liberal values that Trump's got, Pence is none of those things. In a way, they are very, very different politically, but in a way, they're too demographically similar. So
yeah.
Trump really needed, like, a woman or somebody under 50 or, like, a minority or something like that. He needed somebody that was different than him
yeah.
in the way that a lot of people need somebody. Like, when people talk about balancing the ticket out, I mean, they kind of go with somebody who's not like them physically. And I think to a lot of people that are watching Trump and Pence go out there, they're like, oh, here's two old fucks. Here's two old white guys that are just... When I looked up Pence's age, I couldn't believe he was 57. He looks like he's 77 to me. I mean, to me, he looks 10 years older than Trump. I mean, when I saw 57, I thought that must be a mistake. But Pence looks like his damn grandpa. He's up there like, oh, wheezing and stuff. When he's giving that speech, I was like, damn, somebody's get a respirator out there. And then Trump's got all this energy and stuff. So, I mean, he's a decade younger than Trump. You can't even tell. So, like, it's demographically
yeah.
negligible. He might have won Indiana anyway. Like, I don't think that's really going to be as big a problem for him as demographically. I mean, his numbers are just dog shit with women. They're terrible with
yeah.
minorities. I just feel like he should have tried to get somebody that could have change that a
yeah.
little bit.
I think he probably considered it, but at the same time, like, he didn't want to be seen as pandering.
But I mean, when your numbers are 95% negative with African American voters,
yeah.
it's hard to accuse that of pandering. And it may not have even worked. Like, even if he'd have picked
yeah.
Tim Scott or Ben Carson, it may not have even worked, because 94% is a big thing to overcome.
Well,
I mean, you can't really get there.
Yeah. Did you see his numbers with African Americans in Ohio? He was pulling at 0% African Americans in Ohio.
Yeah. The only way he's going to win Ohio is if he can get John Kasich to be like, "Oh, you're black? Well, we need to see a passport." Well, passport, I don't have. They'll have to change it from a voter ID to like a passport, birth certificate, social security card. I mean, they'll need like 5 IDs when they show up to vote.
Yeah.
The only way, because both Pennsylvania and Ohio are just going to be tough with those kind of numbers. Florida, same thing. I mean, when we get into how do we convince people that Trump is not just about him, because this whole outsider narrative, Ben Carson is another one that people insist is an outsider to the political system, and he's not. I mean, he sits on the board of directors of Costco. An outsider is like Hillary chooses you as vice president. Like, that's an outsider, you know? Like, I mean, when we're joking around, like, what's Bernie's odds of being chosen as VP? And you said you had a better chance of being VP, you would have been a better VP, because then it would be like, well, she's really going outside the box. We've never heard of this person, Gabby. Like, she's really going out of her way. And people think Hillary's the ultimate insider. Get somebody that nobody's ever heard of before or whatever. So I think like an outsider is somebody, me sitting here eating a ham sandwich in county corn or a bumblefuck. Or he's like a city councilman of Hooverville, something like that.
I mean, like Mr. Smith. I mean, literally, Mr. Smith goes to Washington. Yeah. That would be an outsider.
But I mean, like, I just don't think of Trump. I mean, this billionaire has been around since the damn Stone Age. He's been famous since the 80s, the early 80s.
Yeah.
This On Fire of the Vanities type character, he's not an outsider. I mean, he's been played in for a long time. He's been famous for a long time. He's been rich for a long time. I think people that are younger, they may not even realize how long he's been around. Like, he's not, he didn't just get famous with The Apprentice. I mean, he was doing commercials back in the 80s, and I mean, he Art of the Deal and all this. I mean, his first marriage was a big deal when that was all going on, all that divorce drama and all this stuff. I mean, he's been out there a long time. His whole secret to success is to basically take his name and sell it. It's to basically associate the Trump name with success. And if you buy these products, you're going to become a success like him. And that's how he sold books. That's how he sold steaks that probably taste like fucking McDonald's hamburgers or something, you know. But his steaks are Trump steaks. So you associate that with the best. You associate, like, his real estate properties with the, I want to live in Trump Tower. That means I've made it. I want to go stay at the Trump Casino. That's the best place there is to stay. I want to go play at the Trump Golf Course. That means, like, I've played the best golf course. It was all about somehow, I mean, really, he's the perfect politician because he's a con man.
Yeah.
And his whole thing is to basically associate his name with success. If you invest with him, bought one of his crappy timeshares or something like that, which was a terrible investment, you thought it was a great investment because in your mind, he is success and it's been associated in that way. I mean, a lot of his money's not even made. He talks about himself, I'm a builder. I'm a real estate guy. I'm a construction guy. He leases his name to buildings that other people build. And so he said that's the best investment you can make is to take your name and put it on the side of a building that you don't have to build and you don't actually own, so you're not liable for things, but you get a royalty off your name being used. And so his whole thing is to make his name into a commodity. Running for president feels like a natural extension of that brand to basically fool people.
Absolutely. I don't know how to describe it, to be honest.
So when I see people say, like, you know, how do you convince people that Trump is not, I don't like what I hear out of a lot of liberals. So if I were to phrase the question, you know, are the outsiders really elites and how do you convince people that they are and that this whole outsider underdog narrative is bullshit, that this is just another fat cat coming in. Trump is another one of the old barons or oligarchs or something. It's not going to be any different than what the Republicans have been. It might even be worse in terms of income inequality and caring about the little guy and all this stuff. How you convince people that? Now, I hear liberals say this a lot. I've heard everybody from Neil deGrasse Tyson, who I love, to Andy Berkowitz, who I love. I've heard a lot of people I really like and respect. I've listened to their work, whatever, say this. It's not about Trump. We have to educate people so that there's never another candidate like Trump again. People will be educated enough to where you, I hate that, throw it out. Because when you start talking to Republicans about, we have to educate you. When they're talking about educating kids so that they don't, they're a Republican, the mind control, the Illuminati's here, you know, and all this shit.
Yeah.
Like that bell goes off their mind that it's like the Illuminati has come to brainwash their kids into liking commie liberal values. The liberals start talking about educating kids and like, to a Republican, that plays into their worst fears anyway, because they already believe that like the media is co-opted by liberals, the education system's co-opted by liberals, college campuses are co-opted by liberals, so they already believe that like their kids are being brainwashed. And that's why they don't like it when Michelle Obama goes and says, eat a carrot or whatever. Fuck you. You know, I mean, like, that's completely inoffensive. But the whole thing is, like, when Bloomberg was sitting with the soda ban, Palin goes out there with a big gulp. And Michelle Obama talks about carrots. She goes out there with a bag of cookies and is like, I like eating shit. Don't tell me not to. This whole thing about don't get near our kids. Don't try to educate our kids. Don't try to tell our kids what to think. That's our job. Like, we're going to brainwash them. So, I think that plays into their worst fears when you start talking about education and things. It's what liberals kind of want to believe in the sense of like, oh, well, these people are just dumb, and if you can just educate them, then you can basically – there are a lot of dumb fans for Trump. I'm sure there are, but they can't all be idiots. You know, if there's something that he's going to be touching on that is appealing to them in some way, and I think you get different demographics of people that are drawn to Trump. Like, there's different types of people that would even really go for him.
Yeah.
And so, and it's not all just idiots and rubes and stuff like that. So when you're talking about how do you convince them that the outsiders are elites, I think that these Republicans' minds, they think the media hates this guy, so he must be an underdog. Like, he must not be an elite. He's got to be one of us. You're talking about people who hate the media. Like, when they say, well, the media hates Trump, why do people not see? Because they hate the media. In their minds, that makes him more desirable, just because the media is saying, don't vote for him, it'll be a disaster, it'll be bad. They already don't trust the media, they don't like the media, they don't believe anything. Fox News has a brilliant gambit, which is to basically say, every other place you get your news from is biased. You got to come to us to get your news, because everywhere else is corrupted. So if you come to us, you'll be fine. But if you don't, God only knows, like, what kind of liberal bias you'll be picking up. And that makes people kind of dependent on them. Like, they're dependent on them for their news because they're afraid to get it anywhere else.
People buy into that, and they take Fox News as almost like their religion. I mean, if you throw out any other news source, oh, no, that's liberal bias. That's just, we can't talk about that. Like, that, they're liberal, they're, you know, they hate the Republicans, and I'm like, are you serious? Like, I mean, have you really watched Fox News?
I mean, of course, MSNBC, of course they do have a liberal bias, but I can remember a guy talking about, like, oh, no, I don't watch CNN because they're all liberal and stuff. And then I was like, okay, CNN, well, I guess we'll do the nightly news. No, CBS is too liberal. I'm like, CBS is too liberal? Okay, well, I guess ABC News. No, ABC News is too liberal. It went down to, like, fucking ESPN's too liberal or whatever. I mean, like, they went through every different media source that wasn't Fox News. And, I mean, it was like Fox News. If they watched sports journalism, it had to be Fox Sports. And if they watched CNBC's too liberal, I'm like, you got to be smoking crack. CNBC's too liberal? Like, there's no fucking way you can say. That's why I watch Fox Business. It's branding, because I think Rupert Murdoch, it's actually a smart business move, saw a need that wasn't being met with basically, there's this big swath of the country that is kind of didn't really have anybody serving them. And I think he said, I can make Fox News, I can make Fox Sports, I can make Fox Business. Like, these can be where they get their business news, their sports news, their everything else news. And it'll be the only place that they go, because it'll be the only place that they trust. I mean, I think if he thought he could make more money with a liberal network, they'd be liberal next week. It would be immediate. But I think that Fox News has been number one in the ratings for a reason, because a lot of liberals, I mean, we may not even get our news from television. Like you know, MSNBC's numbers are never going to beat Fox News, because a lot of liberals, I mean, we might go to a podcast, we might go to YouTube, we might go to Huffington Post, it might be Salon, it might be Real Time with Bill Maher, it might be HBO, it might be CNN a little bit. I mean, there's 50 places for us to go and get stuff, and I think for Fox News, it's like, we've got this demographic that, because I have a media background, I don't actually have a political background in media, they're always saying that, like, liberals are like herding cats, trying to get them in a place, because they're sort of all over the place with their media taste. Like, some of it's internet, podcasts, TV channels. You could make a video for your smartphone and put it out there and get just as many viewers as you would watching Fox News, but it's not going to pay as well. So conservatives are easier to reach. That's why it used to be radio was the medium for conservatives. It used to just be like right-wing talk radio. And so I think Fox News said, oh, we'll do what talk radio's doing, but we'll do it for TV, which is a bigger audience, and we can get that bigger audience, which is why Fox News always has bigger ratings. But the downside is that they're usually viewers that advertisers don't care about, because, unfortunately, 18 to 49 is all advertisers care about, and they said the average age of Bill O'Reilly's show was 70. So it was like, I mean, he gets huge ratings, but it's like advertisers don't even count them, because they don't want people that are Social Security age or whatever. MSNBC, they might beat them in the demo, which is all advertisers care about, is that demo, more than total millions of viewers. I mean, I can remember, like, in Alabama, you go into a gym or a restaurant, and it's Fox News is what's on.
Yeah.
There'd be all these restaurants and gyms. And at the gym, I asked the manager one time, I said, can you please turn this channel? I'm at a gym. Like, there's no reason Fox News should even be on. Put it on ESPN or put it somewhere else. And I don't even like sports. Like, I don't even care to watch football, but I watch it. I mean, watching guys get hammered on the football field is more mentally stimulating the Sean Hannity show. So I was like, I'll watch anything besides this. And he wouldn't do it. He said, the smartest people watch Fox News. It's been proven over and over again, the most well-informed. He got in this argument. I mean, I almost got tossed out of there because he was just, like, adamant about not turning the channel and all this stuff. And, like, the most well-informed people watch Fox News. They don't watch anything else. And only an idiot would want to watch CNN or something like that. And I was just, can we turn it off? I mean, we just have, like, a blank screen. I think a weather map, I mean, the Weather Channel, like, anything else. And he wouldn't turn it. But, I mean, that's one of those people that, kind of what you're talking about, that's almost like a cult, where it's like, that's where they get their news and they don't want to watch anything else.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, and a lot of places are still like the, probably my favorite, one of my favorite places to eat, you know, around here. I walk in there all the time and there it is, Fox News on, and I'm like, you're Asian.
Yeah, I mean, I noticed that too. Every Chinese buffet or whatever, they've got Fox News on, and I guess in the back of their mind, and this will help us fit in or whatever, like they're thinking this will make us seem more, like if we put Fox News on, then Trump will leave us alone, he won't deport us, but I mean, I don't think Trump has a snowball's chance in hell at winning the presidency, but if the narrative becomes it's us against them, and I think a certain type of Trump voter, they just see Hillary and they think, she's got the media, she's got the political power, most of the business class is behind her, Mexicans are behind her, Muslims and all these different gay people, all these groups or whatever. I think that that's fed into this narrative of underdog and all this stuff. But, I mean, of course, the groups that people now think of as elite are historically oppressed, but people don't look at it that way anymore. When you talk to somebody who's in the white working class, they don't think gay people or Muslims or Mexicans or women are at any disadvantage. Like, they don't really believe that. They kind of feel like they're kind of over them in the hierarchy. And I guess if you're a white working class guy and work in a factory or, you know, something like that, I mean, it probably does seem that way. Because when you turn on the TV and every image you see is somebody who's a professional and they're in the business. Think what it is. You got a guy working in a chicken plant, deboning chickens. And he goes home and he sees like a Hollywood actress or whatever that makes $10 million a movie and she's talking about sexism. And he's just, I mean, in the back of his mind, he's like, God damn, like, these people make more money than me. They make more money in a year than I make in my whole life put together. And they're asking me to feel sorry for them. They're asking, they're talking about how miserable they are. And then Trump comes in and he's basically like, fuck all those people. And they're like, finally, you know, somebody's saying what I've always thought. And so when he comes in and he's basically, all these people have got it better than you, you've got it bad or whatever. I think both sides like being pandered to, really.
Yeah.
Like, I think that both kind of like being pandered to. And I think that Trump is doing, I mean, that it's always sort of been this way where Republicans have their groups and Democrats have their groups. But I think now, I kept saying this at the Republican convention. They kept saying, why do you like Trump? He's one of us. And I'm just like, how does a guy who's got a private jet and supermodels and, like, has his name on half the buildings in the damn world or whatever, how does this guy with his name on all these buildings, this Trump tap, how is this one of you? But they really believe that. And in their minds, they don't think Trump started out rich, too. Like, they always think Trump's a self-made man.
Yeah.
Who...
Yeah.
He came from nothing and built this empire, and they look at that as a very aspirational story. Like, when I was watching Trump's speech, the second it ended, all the commentators on NBC were like, that was a dark speech, that was very Orwellian, that was very dark, and which on the one hand, it has to be, because Obama's been president for 8 years. I mean, what's the Republican candidate going to say? Obama's doing a hell of a job. We should all go home. No. They've got to make America sound like a shithole. They've got to make it sound dangerous. So it has to be dark in that sense. But on the other hand, I thought it was a lot more aspirational than they were talking about. Like, there were a lot of dark things in there. But he was basically, towards the end, he was basically like, we're a nation of critics and censors and these people that don't want to put their balls on the line. Go out there and do great things. Go out there. I mean, there is an inspirational tone to him that I think a lot of people don't hear. Like, I think people in the media see him and they see a neo-fascist. They see, like, Hitler 2.0, America version.
Yeah, yeah.
And they're not capable of seeing him as inspirational. They're not capable of seeing him the way that I think the white working class, some of them, not all of them, some of them see him that way. They're always talking about the dog whistles, right? Because Mitt Romney had his dog whistles. Like, oh, Obama, huh? Usually their dog whistles are, like, racist and all this stuff. Trump puts that stuff right out in the open. You know, the way he's not really dog whistling racism. He leads with it.
Yeah.
I mean, it's his icebreaker. And I think the real dog whistles, they're are right there, too, but the media can't see it, is that inspirational, you're a loser today, I'm going to make you a winner tomorrow. I think he's getting people to buy in. He's got so much confidence. He gets people to buy into that confidence. What he said is, these people tell you you can't have the country you want. They're the same people that told you I would never be the nominee. And so right off the bat, he's kind of saying, these people, they say I don't have a shot. Don't listen to them. I'm going to be president. And when I am, like, he finds a way to make people part of his campaign in the sense that if you want to be a winner, he can make you a winner. And it's all about kind of coasting on that narrative of his success is your success. And he's pretty good at that. There is that inspirational aspect to him that I think is appealing to some people out there who feel kind of down and out.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right.
I think with Hillary, let's be honest, Hillary is a 100 times better candidate. She would be a 1,000 times better president. I mean, like, but I think she struggles sometimes with that inspirational aspect. Like, I think people always say that. They say Obama had it, Hillary doesn't. Like, it's okay, because she's going to be a great president. She doesn't really have to be, like, a fantastic candidate. She's going to be a great president. Like, she's not a talker. She's a doer.
Yeah.
She's the person who's actually going to go to the White House, you know, the Oval Office, wherever it is. She's going to go in the bunker room, and she's going to, like, craft these bills and get these plans and, like, really do the homework and do all the tough stuff. And I've said it a thousand times, she's more of a technocrat. She's more Angela Merkel. And I think that's great, because that's going to be a great president. But when you're campaigning, it's harder for people to feel a connection to that. Like, it's harder for them to see themselves as Hillary, even though Trump and Hillary, they both got their advantages. Neither one are what you would call down and out. But I think Trump's got a way that he makes his success seem like overnight success, which it wasn't. He makes it seem like up from the bootstrap success, which it wasn't. I mean, he was born rich, no matter what he fucking says. And he's got a way of making that seem like it could be your success. And I think people see Hillary and they think, well, from the time she was in college, she was working on political campaigns, she went to a good law school, and she was the First Lady of Arkansas, the First Lady. They can't feel a direct connection to her success, because it doesn't seem overnight. Like, it seems like she's worked her whole life to be president. And when people see that, they're like, I'm 30, I'm 35, I'm 40. If I haven't done, like, if I haven't already done what I'm going to do, then I'm not going to do it. And I think Hillary makes them feel that way. Like, I think it's more of a, they can't see themselves and her success the way that they can imagine, oh, Trump, in a year's time, if he's president, I can be rich. You know, it starts to dawn on them that it's, and I think that that's the disconnect.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely right. But, I mean, again, that just goes to who Hillary is as a person, like you were saying. That's who she is. That's not something that you can really fault her for.
Yeah. No, I mean, definitely not. I mean, but I think it's like, we love these overnight successes, because when it looks like somebody has had to work for 30 years to get where they're at, it's harder to envision yourself in there. Because you've had, with Hillary, you've had to see somebody make all the right moves. You know, because she's had to break down all these gender barriers and these glass ceilings, and she'll be the first female president. Like, if the people listen to this, they go, no, I definitely see myself as Hillary. I hear that more from, especially from women, because there's never been a female president before, and they see that as, like, they can identify with her on that level. Then when I was really listening to, like, younger women that liked Bernie over Hillary, it was a little bit of that. It was a little bit like, her path is so, it looks like so much work, and it is. I mean, it has been so much work, and I think that people like that flash in the pan overnight, they want that quick success. They want a lottery winner, you know, and I think for them it looks like Trump is a lottery winner. If you're 60 years old, you no longer see yourself as the guy who's going to be a brain surgeon. You no longer see yourself as the classical pianist who's had to train since they were six to become. You see yourself as, like, if you're going to get anywhere, it's going to be lottery winner. And I think that Trump appeals to that lotto mentality. And Hillary's like, no, since I was 6 years old, I've had to make all the right decisions. I've had to marry the right guy. I've had to go to the top law school. I've had to get great grades. I've had to work, work, work. And I think for a lot of people that are past a certain age, past 25, you know you can't be Hillary Clinton past 25. Yeah. But you feel like you can be, still be Donald Trump, even if you can't. Like, even if you can't, you think he appeals to that aspect. Any thoughts on what we should look forward to at the DNC?
Actual celebrity. I can tell you that.
Michael, what are you talking about? The RNC had Antonio Sabato Jr. I mean, you know what? As a matter of fact, I've been defending Obama for 8 years, but now that the Antonio Sabato Jr. is not, now that he's called him a Muslim, I mean, I just can't defend this guy anymore. I mean, how much more can I really do for him?
That's true.
I love that, too, when Antonio Sabato Jr. was up there and he's like, I mean, like a fucking Calvin Klein model that hadn't worked in 10 years and all this. He's out there like, Obama's a Muslim. I love whenever Republicans attack Obama. He's a Muslim. He's anti-colonialist. Yeah. He's Kenyan. They always say stuff that's like, and what if he were? Like, what? Like, why would that be so bad? You know what I mean? Like, what? Like, what? I feel like they just came up with Obama's gay or something. You know, like, I mean, it feels like it's very third grade insult kind of thing where even if Obama's anti-colonialist, so what? We were founded by anti-colonialists. Like, that's the founding fathers. Like, what would be so bad about that?
Right.
And I just felt...
Yeah, exactly.
The liberals that support Obama, if they heard that, we don't even care. If any of those things were true, none of it would matter to us, you know?
Yeah, and that's what I was about to say. Who that voted for him is going to change their mind?
I mean, there'd be some, but it wouldn't be many people. Many people would not care. But most people would not care. Plus, when he was going out there saying all this about Obama, I mean, I'm like, well, Obama's got 6 months. He could give a fuck what you think. You know what I mean? Like, he's out of there. Which, I mean, eventually we'll talk about that. Like, what's Obama going to do out of office and predicting his legacy and stuff? I think that'll be interesting. But in the meantime, I mean, at the DNC, I'm not expecting riots. Are you?
No, not at all.
I mean, if they didn't have them in Cleveland, I don't know why they would in Philadelphia. And I feel like the media, with the Republican convention, it was so transparent how bad they wanted there to be chaos. Like, it was so transparent that they wanted there to be a damn race riot out there. It was kind of disgusting because they'd be out there like, oh, I hope there's not a race riot out here, licking their chops, looking around. They'd like home in on a black guy wearing an anti-Trump t-shirt, be like, oh, are you going to start a fire? No, I'm just out here saying I don't like Trump. I'm not going to start a fucking fire. I'm not going to, like, oh, are you going to start looting the orange? I don't want to loot this place. I just don't like Trump. What are you talking about?
Yeah.
You know? I mean, there wasn't any of that, and they kept trying to stir up this. There's a lot of people who don't like Trump. They're not just going to go ape shit and burn down the hospital beside the kitchen or something. I mean, it's crazy. I mean, people who are protesting right now are protesting real things. I mean, people have real reason to be upset with the police. They have real reason to be upset with Trump. And I feel like the media's ghoulishness in trying to basically spark a race war in America is disgusting. I mean, it's just like it's so transparent that that's what they would love to happen, so they would have something juicy to cover.
I mean, come on now, they need their ratings.
I mean, they would love it to go to the Watts riots or something, or like the post Rodney King riots in L.A. If they could just get one shot of a black guy dragging a woman out of a car and beating her up, if they could get one shot of something like that, they would just be in heaven. I mean, they'd have footage for the next 2 weeks scaring people to death.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, the next time if a black guy so much as shoots a bottle rocket in a cop car, oh my God, a police shooting, and they're all going to run up on it. Like, I mean, it's going to be, it's transparent. Anyway, we'll keep an eye on that. And for the DNC, I'm looking forward to, Obama's going to speak. I'm looking forward to that. Hillary's going to speak. That's going to be great. Tim Kaine, I've never really seen him. I mean, I've heard him, and I've seen him being interviewed, but this will be his first time in the national spotlight, really. I mean, I know he was, you know, head of the DNC and all that. It's interesting you said actual celebrities, because when you look at the Republican convention, three nights of the week were Trump's personal family members talking, and then you look at the DNC, and you've got, I mean, Obama and Hillary and Bernie Sanders and Tim Kaine and all these people, like Cory Booker's going, I mean, all these people. I mean, you're going to see actual people that you'd want to see speeches from. I mean, actual stars in the political world, their version of celebrities.
Yeah, absolutely.
what if Clint Eastwood came out there with a chair? I've decided that Obama's not that bad. Now that he's got a new chair out there. He's like, what'd you say? You know, he's like totally flip-flops or whatever comes out there. But I don't even, maybe Clint Eastwood was at the Republican convention, but I didn't see him if he was there. He might have been, but I don't know.
Yeah,
I don't even know. I think they struggled to get John Boyd out there. They didn't have any celebrities, really.
Yeah, I pretty much watched. I watched almost all of the convention, all 4 days. So
it was a real who's not of Hollywood. I know that.
It was.
I mean, it was a parade of F-listers. I mean, it wasn't even the C-listers. It was F-listers out there, mostly.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody called it Trump Festival of Losers, and it was like, anyway, until next time, Michael, what's your web address, please?
BlueInAlabama.com.
Okay, find me at AlabamaLoophole.com. Join us next time when we get episode 30, another milestone. I can't wait.